Hi, this is Elmore Leonard. I'm listening to Film Sociology, and it's a real program. It's great.
It's time to hear what's good, what's bad, and what's ugly at the multiplex and the art house. What's new on video and streaming, and you might also hear about some dead people we like.
We don't have time for dead people we don't like.
Anyway, this is Film Sociology, where you'll find out what's the next cinematic marvel.
It was unbelievable!
And what's just a movie.
Shut up! My God, you have no freaking life!
Okay, here's your host and my dad, Matthew Soci.
Hello there, film lovers. Welcome to Film Sociology, a film podcast here at WFYI.org. If you have a question or a comment, you can email me at msocey, that's M-S-O-C-E-Y, at WFYI.org. I'm also on Facebook, also on Twitter, at Matthew Soci. This show is available on iTunes and, like all of the podcasts here at WFYI, available on Spotify. Well, friends, I have a lot to cover on this week's program, so it's just you and me. But I'm happy to say that for the second week in a row, I got to see a really lovely small film that I'm happy to share with you and champion a little bit, as well as several different films on video that I was also happy to experience and be able to share that with you. That's kind of how the basis of Film Sociology is letting you know about lesser-known films and then sharing them with you. Yes, I review big stuff from now every now and then. And we'll be talking about somebody big in the movie world in a little bit into dead people we like, because we don't have time for dead people we don't like. But yeah, last week was the Leonard Cohen documentary. This week, I really am happy to say that I saw a film called Summering, which is the story of four girls about ready to go into middle school. And I've not checked to see if I've seen these young ladies and other things. Leah Barrett, Sanal Victoria, Eden Grace Redfield, and Madeline Mills. And it's that weekend right before going to middle school, you know, the next big life chapter, especially at a young age. Their moms are played by Lake Bell, Sarah Cooper, Megan Mullally, and Ashley Medqui. And so it's the last weekend with these before moving up into a new grade. The foursome are, you know, like we all did in our younger days, vowing to stay BFFs forever. And within the 10 minutes of the script, thank you, Sid Field, as they have a tree that they call Terabithia, in which they like to donate items to the tree Terabithia as an honoring. And while they were going to their tree of Terabithia, they find a dead body. And then it goes from there on how do they handle it, what will become of it, and how will they wind up in the end? So yes, already this gives flashbacks to Stand By Me, which I was, I believe, 15 when that film came out, because that film had the famous tagline, "You want to see a dead body." Well, this is one that they discover, as opposed to actually. Anyway, this was not this was a surprise on their destination, as opposed to Stand By Me. I need to revisit Stand By Me because I remember seeing it as a teenager and not really caring, because I could see guys my age cry and whine at school. I didn't need it in my movie theater. Yeah, I was a snot, even a movie nerd, even in middle, you know, high school. But it doesn't go down that path. There's no bullies, thank God. There's a couple moments where it could go dark, and it doesn't. And it doesn't turn into a Disney Channel movie. I'm happy to say that. It sticks with the foursome, and we get to see their strengths, their weaknesses. They love each other. Each has things that annoys the other, but not enough to cause a rift, at least too bad of a rift. There's a Chekhov rule about a prop and its use, and it's used actually well and smart in this one. It's a lower key version of Stand By Me, with just a solid relationship of the four leads, the four young ladies. And they each also have their own home life, and we get to see those in the few scenes with the moms. One is particularly helicoptery. The other, dad has disappeared, and mom has still been taking it really hard after a year. And you know, the moms reflect the girls and their talents and their strengths and their weaknesses. There's a moment where they try, I'm trying to find out information about this body that they found. And after doing some investigative work and it looking like almost like a detective story, when they go to a bar to ask for information, they decide to have a seance. And one girl says to the other, especially with conflicting attitudes and ideas, you have CSI, I have Ghost Hunters. So it's as simple as that. They don't sound like adults. They don't sound like, you know, created movie children. And the film is co-written and directed by James Ponsoldt, who I know probably is best known. Like, his big film was The Circle, which I really wasn't crazy about. The Emma Watson, Tom Hanks film. But he also did The Spectacular Now, which is really good. And one of my favorite films about journalism, The End of the Tour, is also one that he directed. And it was, and I believe Chris Lloyd over at the Film Yap is one of those that said, this was a film I wish was longer. That way they could flesh it out more. I didn't mind it being this length, and I didn't mind, I guess you could, but I didn't mind this particular foursome and what they were going through. So it's a really lovely surprise, and right now is on my list, you know, the list that everybody has to talk about. But it's also August, so take that for what it's worth. But yeah, this is a really lovely surprise, and I'm happy that it's coming to your local art house cinema. Look it up, look for it. But yeah, look for Summering. It's on Bleecker Street, and right now probably the biggest surprise film I've had in 2022. All right, going over to some films on DVD and Blu-ray. From Film Movement. Yes, from Film Movement. I see the logo. It's a documentary called Fanny, The Right to Rock. And this is another reminder that you don't have to be a huge, successful rock band to have a fascinating story. I'm looking at you, VH1. We've had, and there's been a few documentaries over the last year or so that I've been able to talk about on this. And this was a group I had no clue about, and I should have. Because it's the first all-female band to release an album on a major label. Two Filipina American sisters who started their band in Sacramento, California in the 1960s. So there are a lot of talking heads, lowercase t, lowercase h, voicing the greatness of Fanny. And after listening to watching the documentary and listening to the music, I'm like, yeah. Yeah, they're really good. Bonnie Raitt, Sherry Curry, Joe Elliott, Kate Pearson of the B-52s, Kathy Valentine of the Go-Go's, John Sebastian. I believe it's Earl Slick, who was David Bowie's guitarist, kind of summed it up best in one sentence. It's always the ones who open the door that get screwed. He didn't say screwed. But yeah, this is, you know, this group had more albums and lasted longer than the Go-Go's. You know, obviously opened the door for bands like the Runaways and every other girl group you can think of. But the fact that they had to be the, especially the sisters, the two Filipina sisters, who were the only non-whites in their neighborhood and got racism immediately, and boys couldn't date them because they were different. And then going through the music industry in the late 60s, which, well, you can get the idea there. But they became a famous, they were famous for having a band house in Los Angeles. They got signed to Warner Brothers. You know, there's also the heartbreak that the label and the band wound up having to drop one of their original members. They wound up opening for Humble Pie, Deep Purple. They played at Carnegie Hall. There's footage of them on the variety show that Kenny Rogers hosted. I forgot Kenny Rogers had a variety show. And Helen Reddy and Dick Cavett. All of that groundbreaking stuff and good solid rock, and still having to deal with the generic questions on how do you feel being a girl, you know, playing a guitar or playing an instrument, and the audience that just some members of the audience that just wanted to see their bodies and not hear them sing. Unfortunately, those audience members are still out there today. It goes through the history of the band, and there's a coda at the beginning. Well, the bookends at the beginning and the end of the band reuniting to record new material, and it was really cool. So look into this, especially if you're into music history and for girl power. Definitely check out Fanny, The Right to Rock. It's now out on Film Movement. Also out from Film Movement from Germany is a drama called Cocoon, about a 14-year-old girl who's going through quite a bit. And one of the things she likes to collect are caterpillars. Goes with the title. But we see in less than 90 minutes a 14-year-old girl going for her first period, falling for another girl, getting her first serious broken heart. She gets her heart broken during one very hot summer going on in Berlin, and hanging out with her older sister and a couple other girls has been kind of the tag along. Mom is in and out of the picture. She may or may not be a barfly that we've learned from this. We see the girl going through her first crush. And then, as I mentioned in any coming of age film, if you fall for somebody pretty early on, it's not going to end well. But they go through this, and the embarrassment and the camaraderie, especially when womanhood kicks in when you're 14. There's lovely moments of the budding young couple together, which makes the gut punch near the end all the more painful, even though you know it's coming. But yeah, nice coming of age film from Germany called Cocoon on Film Movement. And then finally from Kino Lorber, from England, is a drama called Ali and Ava. And it's so Ava is the mother of four plus a grandmother. Ali is sharing a flat with his now ex-wife, even though they're not talking to anybody about it, even though she has been seen in public with other men. It's, yeah, I know, it's not even a period piece. And how Ali and Ava meet because of school and a very rainy day. And as they get to talking, their mutual love of music, not necessarily the same stuff, but their mutual love of music and their loneliness together, that kind of bonds them. Two unlikely people, and I like the unlikely, unlikely love stories. And I'm looking at these two faces, two good performances from our leads, and I'm going through IMDb, and yeah, they're those people that I've recognized. And Claire Rushbrook is Ava, and it was that realization. I'm going through IMDb. I started at the beginning, and I realized, holy cow, she is Brenda Blethyn's daughter in Mike Lee's Secrets and Lies. And I really, really liked her in that. There was a combative mother-daughter relationship in that one. And so quite good. She also appeared in films like Spice World, Spider-Man Far From Home, Ammonite. I can't read, friends. Ammonite. So, and then the guy, Ali, is played by Adil Kathar. Best known, he was probably most known, he was in The Big Sick. Both Claire and Adil were in the film Enola Holmes, and he was also in Victoria and Abdul. Two very comfortable performances. The actors and the characters are comfortable with each other. Things are good, and of course, until their families, the outside world, starts to come in and intervene and comment. And, you know, each of their families have their own complexities and each other roles with it. So nice, low-key love story that doesn't get into a capital L. It doesn't need to. So look for Ali and Ava, which is available on Kino Lorber. And finally, on video, speaking of music documentaries, another example of a cool story I knew nothing about and I got the education, called Waiting, the Van Duren Story. And there's two stories going on in this. So Van Duren was a guy who had recorded some material, and it was from the ashes of Big Star. That's it. And he was deemed apparently the next Paul McCartney. And he recorded some music and was well received, but nobody bought it. And so there, you get Van's story on top of two Australian guys who are really into music and start a friendship because of their love of music. One is a band manager, the other is a musician, and they finally started talking about Van Duren and Big Star, and then they decided to actually make a documentary. So you get the Van Duren story plus the making of the steps that these two had to make traveling through Australia and in traveling to the United States to find Van. There's a whole sidebar about the masters, who owns the masters to the music. The filmmakers learn the hard way. It's hard to do a documentary about musicians, certain musicians, if you can't get the rights to their music. But it's a really cool journey of, like I said, both stories are done well. The making of as it's happening, and then the story of the guy itself. And it's funny because I just bought the Black Star album, or Big Star album, I should say, a couple of months ago, and it's in my car, and I need to re-listen to it. So, but yeah, that's out from MVD. But yeah, Waiting, the Van Duren story, really good stuff. You're listening to Film Sociology, a film podcast here at WFYI.org. We'll go around the bend. We're going to go around the horn, and then we're going to talk about dead people we like, because I don't have time for dead people we don't like. And then we'll grab a pencil and find out what you've been watching, okay? Glad you're hanging out with me. Over at the Tibbs Drive-In this weekend, on screen one, you have Bullet Train and Where the Crawdads Sing. On screen two, Bodies, 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 and the extended version, okay, of Everything, Everywhere, All at Once. Screen three is Nope and Thor. And screen four is Minions, Rise of Gru, and Easter Sunday, all at the Tibbs Drive-In. At the Skyline Drive-In this weekend is Nope plus The Black Phone. And, of course, the Super Monster Movie Fest Size Matters is coming up on August 26th and 27th, so mark your calendars there. At IU Cinema, Thursday, August 18th at 7 o'clock, Star Wars The Phantom Menace. On Friday the 19th at 7 p.m., Crimes of the Future. Saturday the 20th, Saturday, August 20th at 1 o'clock, yep, Cat Video Fest 2022. And then Saturday, August 20th at 4 p.m., Crimes of the Future. And then Thursday, August 25th, ooh, from 1951, The Thing from Another World, a.k.a. the original Thing. So that's cool. And then Friday, August 26th at 7 p.m., Tahara. All of that is happening over at IU Cinema at the Historic Art Craft Theater in Franklin. Mark your calendars. Friday, August 19th at 7:30 p.m., Miss Congeniality. And then Saturday, August 20th at 7:30 p.m., The Terminator. And then Thursday, August 25th for seniors, 55 and over. And then August 26th and 27th, Friday and Saturday, 2 and 7:30 p.m., The Wizard of Oz. All of that is happening at the Historic Art Craft Theater. All right. So here's my Olivia Newton-John story. Well, stories, really. Those who've known me long enough know that I never had a latency period. That explains a lot. And I liked women, I think, more than girls my own age. That also says a lot. And my early celebrity crushes leaned toward the likes of Raquel Welch, Anne Margaret, Sophia Loren, thanks to my dad, Pam Grier, that sort of thing. You get the idea, you know, bombshells. And Olivia Newton-John, pre-physical, was my celebrity crush in the division of Girl Next Door. My mom had her 70s albums, the country albums, and so a lot of time in my room with my record player, yes, I had a record player, listening to those albums and staring at those album covers. And I was probably six when I heard I Honestly Love You, and when she made the whisper, it hit me like a shot. And it's funny, hearing after she had died, I was not the only one that happened to. There was a generation of guys and girls who thought she was whispering that to me, to us, you know, the individual. So a great example of somebody singing to you and you're just listening. So there was that aspect of it. I'll get to the movies in a moment. And I love, looking back, I love the fact that she's, you know, in her own way, stuck into the country music scene. The good old American boys club that is still today the Nashville country music scene. How, you know, it was in the early 70s, it was how dare somebody from Australia do our music. And not only did she do it well, she got CMAs for it. She got Grammys for it. So, you know, way to ruffle feathers there, Olivia. And before we get to the three, because there's three. She appeared, of course, in 1965's Funny Things Happen Down Under. Of course, she didn't know that. And the film Tomorrow from 1970, which I need to revisit. I've seen clips of it, and I might need beer and pizza on this. Despite my love of her music, and yeah, I didn't mind the 80s stuff as well. It obviously went in a different direction, and it was glossier and more... she was more gussied up, I guess, in the 80s than she was in the 1970s. And I know she's just passed away. Doesn't change my opinion on the films. Sorry. But at age 52, and having a film show, of all things, I am trying to get better at not yucking another person's yum. I don't get grease. And I know people my age and younger that desperately love Grease. And yes, it's filled with the 30-year-olds, high school students, and the 20-something high school students. And, you know, just the theme of if you want to be popular, conform really bugs me to this day. And that being said, seeing guys who like Olivia Newton-John and want the Madonna whore fantasy, you get that with Sandy at the beginning of the film and Sandy at the end of the film. And I'm already getting sitcom family look because the male gaze is the male gaze. So there was that. And so yeah, huge following for Grease. And yes, there is a following for Xanadu. Hi, Dee Dee. Hi, Lish. Yes, and the music is more listenable than the film is watchable. And yes, it's Gene Kelly's final musical. My God. Their duet together is nice. Her singing You Made Me Love You, that was one of my first introductions to that song. The duet with Cliff Richard, you know, the Film Sociology is your home for all Cliff Richard information. There's that. Michael Beck, I have to give him kudos because he went from the Warriors to this. And so he's a part of it. And apparently there was a stage musical version of Xanadu, and it made fun of the ridiculousness of the film. I hope that's true. And again, I know it has a huge cult following. Trust me, friends. If you've ever been to the Film Sociology offices and seen my music collection, my film collection, I own a lot of cinematic garbage. I do, and unabashedly. So, you know, I'm wearing my Blackula shirt for crying out loud as I'm recording this. So, fine. You enjoy that. You enjoy your nonsense. I'll enjoy my nonsense over here. That being said, compared to those. I remember seeing Two of a Kind when it came out in theaters, and Two of a Kind makes Xanadu and Grease look like Rodgers and Hammerstein. I know Two of a Kind's not a musical. It's just a god-awful film. And those who love Grease and Xanadu, I don't know anybody who defends it. It's just a convoluted mess. And yeah, Twist of Fate came from it. That's about it. So yeah, just not stellar. And then in the 90s, Olivia started showing up, not necessarily starring in things, but showing up in films like It's My Party and Sordid Lives. And, yeah, she did a Sharknado film. She was in Sharknado 5, which was made for TV. The last film contribution I saw from Olivia Newton-John was hearing her sing Over the Rainbow in John Woo's Face Off. So... but she's made an impact. She has a cinematic cult following. I can't deny that. So Olivia, thank you for the music. Thank you for keeping me company when I was younger. Maybe I'll get some beer and watch those movies sometime. Maybe with the right people. I don't know. So there's that. But, there's also two other actors that passed away recently whose resumes are better. And, couple of those guys who actually did one film together. I'll get to that in a little bit. Roger E. Moseley, best known for playing TC on Magnum P.I., did a lot of television, a lot of films, going all the way back to the New Centurions, which is one I need to revisit, cop drama with and comedy with George C. Scott and Stacey Keach. Hitman, which I need to revisit. That's Bernie Casey in the, which was basically a blaxploitation version of Get Carter. The Mac, which I've seen many times. Sweet Jesus Preacher Man. I can't remember if I have that one or not. Terminal Island. Darktown Strutters. Blaxploitation biker film. Lead Belly. He played Lead Belly in 1976. That's one I'm going to revisit fairly soon. Stay Hungry. The Greatest. Semi-Tough. Roots, the Next Generation, The Jericho Mile, I Know Why the Caged Bird Sings, Steel, Heart Condition. Oh, that's right. He did play Officer Cole in Unlawful Entry, Pentathlon, and A Thin Line Between Love and Hate, among others. So, and then Clue Gallagher, who played Billy the Kid on TV and had a long career going all the way back to the 1950s. The earliest thing I saw him in, and quite an impact, was he played Lee Marvin's kind of right-hand man, his minion, in 1964's The Killers, directed by Don Siegel. Lee Marvin, Angie Dickinson, and playing in his final role as a crime lord, Ronald Reagan. Yeah. Clue also appeared in Winning, and that was shot here in Indianapolis. He was Abilene in The Last Picture Show, The Other Side of Midnight, a slew of 70s television, A Force of One, Touched by Love, Chattanooga Choo Choo, Return of the Living Dead, that goes out to my Golden Globus guys, Into the Night, Nightmare on Elm Street 2, Summer Heat, Tapeheads, The Hidden, I'm Gonna Get You Sucka, My Heroes Have Always Been Cowboys, Piranha 3D, which I believe his son directed, was in Tangerine, and his last role came in 2019 as the bookstore owner in Quentin Tarantino's Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. He's the one who the bookstore scene involving Margot Robbie as Sharon Tate. So, and he's always one of those that Quentin's always liked this guy, and he got to put him in a movie. So, now the one film that these two gentlemen did together, Clue and Tony, although they had no scenes together, was the 1974 cop drama McHugh, directed by John Sturges, starring John Wayne as a cop. He only did two. McHugh, and then a year later he appeared in Brannigan. Anyway, but Clue is one of a fellow officer who is friends with John Wayne, and Roger E. Moseley plays Rosie, a pimp, a dealer, and great 70s clothes. So revisiting McHugh, which I'm hoping to talk about on another podcast, hint guys, the fascinating aspect of the fact that John Wayne is 67 years old in this film, and he had turned down Dirty Harry, but then again, so did Frank Sinatra and Paul Newman, and Westerns were dying out, and cop films were on the rise, so he was able to make two, and it's an oddity. It's okay. You could trim about 20 minutes off this film. The Golden Globus guys would like it. Would prefer that. And but there is one great stunt that happens on the beach outside Seattle, where a car rolls, I believe, 7, 8, 9 times. So, and apparently the practice jump was done by Hal Needham, who was injured, and then they got another person, and the jump was safe, and that's what you get in the film. So, anyway, salute to those gentlemen. Speaking of Golden Globus, they are doing, for the next 3 weeks, Golden Globus Theater. Look them up. They are fun. But they are doing the 3 Charlton Heston sci-fi films. So, Planet of the Apes is this week, then probably Omega Man, and then Soylent Green. And those 3 films have always fascinated me because Heston is treating those films as serious as the Ten Commandments and Ben-Hur. So, you know, get ready for some serious Chuck Heston talk on Golden Globus Theater. You're listening to Film Sociology, a film podcast here at WFYI.org. All right, grab a pencil. Let's find out what you've been watching lately. Hopefully you've been able to watch some good films that are new, or at least new to you, as well as falling back on old favorites. We start on Twitter with NYC Cinema Confidential, at Grindhouse Confidential. Shriek of the Mutilated from 1974. So bad, it's incredible. Brian writes The Gray Man and then said, easy to remember this week. I was only able to watch one so far. That's okay. That's all right. Steve writes Prey. Josie Alma Press writes pretty good for a Predator film. I've been hearing that a lot from folks, and it's that Prey, which is on Hulu. If you're a fan of Predator, it's one of the best ones. Heading over to Facebook, oh, hi, Nikki. This goes out to the cast and crew of Lysistrata. We opened in October, but Nikki writes Lightyear and loved it. Mike writes Fellowship of the Ring and The Good Lord Bird. JR writes the Sandman TV series. Jamie writes The Hangover 2, Gray Man, Belfast, which she deemed amazing, Lightyear, and Sisterhood of the Traveling Pants 2. I did not review the second one. I reviewed the first. I told that story recently. Everin writes Bullet Train and said, 'twas a romp. Jared writes The Departed and All the President's Men. And Ed chimed in, oh, prop. And Jared Ryder, completely unintentional-ish. Yep, no raids at Film Sociology. Jason writes Under Siege. Gretchen writes Dune. Which one? Teresa. Oh, wow. Teresa writes Steel Magnolias and When Harry Met Sally, both for the first time ever. Better late than never, Teresa. I'm glad about that. Steel Magnolias was one of my mom's favorites. That's, And when she got ill and died, that was one of three films I could not watch for a long time because I would just lose it. Steel Magnolias, Terms of Endearment, and Driving Miss Daisy. My mom loved those. When Harry Met Sally, I've warmed up a little bit. I'm still an Annie Hall guy. Such small portions. And sometimes we need the eggs. Daniel writes, I finally saw The Big Short. And thank you, Daniel. I'm glad you did. And now you know things are just a lot. Life is a lot easier if it's explained by Margot Robbie. Alice just writes that new sea monster movie on Netflix for kids. So look for that on your Netflix queue. Kurt writes, Born Free at Beltrace. Bullet Train and Easter Sunday at AMC. Very good, Kurt. Hi, Beltrace. Joshua writes, 99 Homes, Margin Call. Then I went down an artificial intelligence rabbit hole of Ex Machina, Source Code, and Transcendence. John chimes in, the AI computer in Moon is pretty good too, voiced by Kevin Spacey. Yes, Moon is great, directed by Duncan Jones, who also did Source Code. So I love my correspondence on my Facebook page by y'all. Jessica writes Prey and the Secrets of Dumbledore. Taylor writes Tarzan and His Mate. Holy moly. And informs me the nude scene was left in. Thank you, Taylor. The Dirty Dozen, Men in Black 3, my fave of all of them. Wow. I just remember Josh Brolin imitating Tommy Lee Jones. And Eraser. Magnus writes Nope. Patterson, and Girl with the Dragon Tattoo. Doug writes, Ella Cinders, Uptown Saturday Night, In the Line of Fire, and in parentheses, believe it or not, I'd never seen it. Wow, I was in college. It was the summer after graduating college when that came out, so good call. And again, Doug, it happens to all of us. Also for Doug, Marcel Lachelle with Shoes On, plus the series The Bear. All right, I'm currently going through The Bear, but apparently my smarter two-thirds are ahead of me, so I will have to catch up, but now I'm in rehearsal. These are the first world problems. Struggle is real. Lou Harry writes Uncharted. Jay writes Bullet Train. It was pretty good. Patty writes Moss Rose from 1947 and The Desolation of Smog. Smaug, as I would say. John writes... On vacation in Brown County, and it's raining, which means we're stuck inside watching movies. We've all had those, John. Hook, The Nevadan, third year in a row watching this on a vacation. I'm sorry, John. Lord of the Rings, 30 Children, documentary on getting Jewish children out of Austria and Germany before Hitler locked down and prevented them from leaving. The Jinx, and then wrote Robert Durst's Guilty. Anthropoid with Cillian Murphy about the assassination attempt on one of Hitler's inner circle. And last but not least, because the host of this wonderful show told me to, that's me, Raging Bull. And I have to say, it might be Scorsese's best, and that's coming from a mob fanatic. Well, first off, John, thank you for watching Raging Bull. As I was revisiting it, I think I have half a commentary track I need to finish, and then I'm caught up on that. I was 10 when that film came out, and so to watch that on a big screen and be fascinated by a guy who just couldn't turn it off. And at first, because I was 10, it's a film about boxing, but it's kind of more than that. Anybody who can't turn it off in anything, it just so happens that his job was beating the daylights out of people, and he was doing it to his family and friends and strangers and his wives. So that part fascinated me. My dad had a small history with boxing and wrestling. He was a ringside physician. It looks amazing. De Niro's amazing. The performances are all great. Yes, and not just the putting on the weight. And amazing boxing footage. Thelma Schumacher got an Oscar for editing and well-deserved. The black and white photography, the use of sound, just brutal, absolutely brutal. And boxing is brutal. But Scorsese, along with writer Paul Schrader, do a lot of downward spiral redemption tales, and sometimes they're redeemed and sometimes they're not. And we don't really know if LaMotta ever really rehabilitated himself. And listening to, there is a commentary track with Jake LaMotta being interviewed by a younger writer, and there are moments, really bad moments, that are captured in the film, and he has either no recollection or he just doesn't want to talk about it. So that's fascinating, I think, to me. And it's like, you know, it would be to a lesser degree if I was still doing radio voice and radio work and radio attitude while I was at home with my family, which I'm sure in some cases they have said it's hard for him to turn it off. So that looking back at it with much older eyes, I think it's a masterpiece. So and yes, there are I will tell this story. I'm now going into stories. When M went to school, and I got to meet their roommate, who was a film major, and we were talking about film at breakfast. And then finally, when the roommate and I had met a pause to, you know, have a bite to eat or a cup of coffee, M looked over at me and dismissed me as a Scorsese fan. And so then I proceeded, and I knew what they were doing, because Twitter film bros worship at the altar of Scorsese, so I sent them a list of Scorsese films that film Twitter bros won't watch. Silence, Kundun, New York, New York, Age of Innocence, Alice Doesn't Live Here Anymore, you know, all of those. Even The Last Waltz, to a certain degree. So there's more to him than just that. But yeah, I love Raging Bull, and watching it again, it's terrifying. Just like I think Taxi Driver is a horror film more than anything else. So, but yeah, thank you, John. I'm glad you got to watch Raging Bull. What timing? Aaron writes that he saw Stand By Me. Well, watch Summering, because I think it's a better version of that. But I will try to revisit Stand By Me because it's been too long. Eric writes 13 Lives, highly recommended. Manny writes, Prey, fantastic, should have been in theaters too. And was also prompted by Elvis to revisit the Buddy Holly story, Great Balls of Fire, and La Bamba. That's a lot of music biopics. Cleanse your palate with Walk Hard. But thank you, Manny. Missy writes, 10 Rillington Place and 13 Lives. And thank you, Craig, for jumping in. 10 Rillington Place is a classic, tremendous acting, horrible true story, but compelling viewing. Yeah. there's a good correspondent between Missy and Craig. I'm glad you two were able to connect over 10 Rillington Place. That's what film sociology does for you, friends. Ed writes Molly's Game. And we also saw the new Baz Luhrmann Elvis film. Really enjoyed it. Also saw The Man from Toronto. Amanda went to the library and rented 1408, saw Nope, Cujo, and Gorillas in the Mist. Chris writes, OMG, 13 Lives, awesome. Also, Horrible Bosses, Gray Man, and Elvis. Kathy writes, started watching the West Wing series. That's a long, good haul, Kathy. Enjoy that. Melissa writes, Margin Call and They Them. Jeff writes, The Glass House, the 1972 TV movie. Maggie writes, my boyfriend and I are watching RRR, the new Bollywood movie on Netflix. It is so freaking fun, so well made. I'm trying to tell everyone I know about the movie. That was on my radar as well, Maggie. Thank you. And Maggie also watched Contact. Thank you. Holly, my director, Land and League of Their Own. Daniel writes, The Singing Nun. Daniel, you only saw one film? Wow. Hope you're having a busy week. Adam writes, Bullet Train and Old Henry. Frank writes, Last Night in Soho and Nightmare Alley, which is an excellent film. Looks great, phenomenal casting, and the pacing is perfect. Interesting changes from the 1947 version. I'm with you on that, Frank. Also deemed Last Night in Soho excellent, and Anna Taylor is very fine. But yeah, Nightmare Alley's one, yeah, I wish it was tighter, and I wish it was snappier dialogue, but it looks great. And you got the original ending in the Guillermo del Toro version. Eric, first views, Greyhound and the Many Saints of Newark, and rewatches The Incredible Hulk, High and Low, and The Third Man. Thank you, Eric. Randy writes, just watched Prey on Hulu, loved it. That's P-R-E-Y, by the way, just so there's no confusion. Ron writes Grey, G-R-E-Y. Gary writes Bullet Train, Committed, Moana, How to Train Your Dragon, and Fury of the Demon. Sarah writes Goldeneye, my boyfriend, lover of both James Bond and history, is going through all the 007 films in order and analyzing them via the historical lens during the time that the films were made and sharing that with his Twitch audience each week. Cool, Sarah. Thank you for sharing that. And I hope you're enjoying those as well. Tell Zania to call me. Anthony writes, The Tourist and Your Highness. David writes, Time Bandits, Weekend at Bernie's, No Apologies, he says, and Gravity. JJ writes, Prey, excellent, and Argento's Tenebrae, part of our summertime Gallo journey. Movine writes, The Good Traitor, a Danish ambassador to the U.S. on the eve of Nazi invasion of Denmark. Fascinating, based on historic events. Buried documentary, daughter accuses father of killing her best friend when she was 8 years old but had repressed memories for 20 years. Linda writes, hopes to see Mrs. Harris on Wednesday. Thank you. Good luck. Rebecca writes, Trainwreck, Woodstock 99. Guy writes, 13 Lives, available on Amazon Prime. Michael writes, Force of Evil. Duke writes, I watched the Sparks documentary. I was a fan growing up in the 70s. Their last efforts are great. Kevin writes, The Lost City of Z, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, Fight Club, 13 Lives, Family Band, The Cow Sill Story, and Brian Wilson, The Long Promised Road. Mike writes, Moon Knight, yes, I know it's not a movie, but it's made like one. That's okay, Mike. That's what the streaming service series have become. It's okay. Paula writes, Marcel the Shell and Mrs. Harris Goes to Paris. Joellen writes, The Dropout and The Man Who Knew Too Much. David writes, Paths of Glory. Rachel writes, Dennis the Menace, Enter the Warrior's Gate, and The Golden Voyage of Sinbad. Joni writes, Elvis, Clueless, and Trainwreck, the documentary about Woodstock, 1999. Catherine writes, Hudson Hawk, and chimes in, I wouldn't be surprised if they were all paid with coke for their that fever dream. I do love Richard E. Grant's scenery chewing. It felt like not as clever. I felt like if someone not as clever trying to be Blake Edwards. That's a really good comparison, Catherine. And I would watch Hudson Hawk again if I wanted to solidify that, but I won't. So I'm glad you did. David writes, I just saw the new Elvis movie today. Very flashy. Gary writes, Bullet Train. Phil writes, Barb and Star Go to Vista Del Mar, as well as Soul. And finally, Darren writes that he saw Prey on Hulu. And there you go, friends. That's what you've been watching this week. So hopefully you've been inspired to watch some stuff. Thanks, John, for watching Raging Bull on my, I guess, insistence. That's the show. But hopefully you've been able to watch some good films that are new, or at least new to you, as well as falling back on old favorites. Friends, some words to live by.
Silent Breed is people!
Zardoz has spoken.
Go see a good movie. You deserve it. There's plenty out there. Don't forget, you heard in the words, you know, what Charlton Heston said. Golden Globus Theater, the next three episodes are devoted to Planet of the Apes, The Omega Man, and Soylent Green. That's going to be fun to listen to on Wednesdays. So, anyway, thanks for listening. We will end this week's show with a little audio tribute to, yes, Olivia Newton-John. And as I mentioned, Film Sociology is your home for all Cliff Richard information. And this was one of the few songs that Cliff had that charted here in the United States. Had a few, not nearly as many as in England, but a nice duet between Olivia Newton-John and Cliff Richard from Xanadu, Suddenly. So salute to everybody. Thanks for listening. You're listening to Film Sociology, a film podcast here at WFYI.org. Good afternoon, Fort Myers. Good afternoon, California. Good afternoon, Michigan. Thanks, Olivia.
I can't believe you let her watch Manos. Is she scarred for life?
Let's put it this way.
What parent are you?
When I wake her up, I vocalize the theme to wake her up to get her ready to school.
Oh, you're a terrible father.
Okay. We'll do it live.
Okay.
We'll do it live!